OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Behar. If you hear in the background the sound of a siren, that's one of the sounds we've been putting up with yesterday, today, because of Bush's visit. The roads have been closed over here. Yesterday, I was caught on the other side of the street on foot for 25 minutes till I was able to cross. And I really didn't know how far down I'd have to go in either direction in order to be able to get across and come back. So I waited until the police lifted the barriers. Actually, I just listened to this piece that was recorded just now and did not hear the sirens in the background. If you do, then that's fine. If not, I have two other sounds, as long as we're talking about President Bush's visit, to give you a flavor of what we've been putting up with these past days. Here's the first. Need to hear it again before you guess. If you guessed helicopter, you'd be correct. We've had them flying overhead, several of them, over the King David area where the president is staying. We are on the parallel street to that Keren HaYesod, which has been closed on and off to vehicular traffic and even to pedestrian traffic on occasion yesterday and today. And here is one more sound to test you. We'll give it 3 seconds worth. I won't play that one again. I'll tell you what it was. It was a blimp. I was just kidding, you had 3 seconds of silence there, but we have had two blimps flying over the area as well, 24 hours a day, and I can't really blame them for disturbing us, but the helicopters and the sirens are bad enough, although they've replaced the regular bustle of traffic, so maybe we're better off with an occasional helicopter sound. Anyway, it was all in line of telling you that we've had the visit from President Bush, and to possibly react a little bit to it on a much more significant issue than the interruption of traffic or the noise that it has caused. But before we get into that, let's just mention that recording and first broadcast is on Yom Chamishi, that's Thursday the 10th of ER 5768, May 15th, 08. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imecha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim la'boker, shomerim la'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha'chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeyafela l'ora, umishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. There was, there is, a quarter of a page ad on the front page of today's Jerusalem Post, which summarizes my reaction to President Bush's visit. So let me read it to you. It's entitled, In God We Trust, question mark. President Bush, the Bible is so astoundingly contemporary. In Malachim Aleph, Kings 1, chapter 18, the prophet Eliyahu issues a challenge. How long will you keep hopping between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, and if Baal, follow him. That is exactly the choice you face today. Confused? President Bush, if Islamic terror is threatening Western civilization, you can't fight it in Iraq while establishing a new state and international base for it here in Israel. If the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people, according to God's law, international law, and moral law, then you cannot dismember it and give it to Israel's sworn enemy. We are not. Mr. President, we are not confused. The majority of Israelis see reality clearly, as do the majority of Americans. We know that Olmert, Livni, and the present government are selling Israel out. We know that any Arab talk of peace is just a tactic in their strategy to destroy us. We know that no one will help us or save a weak Israel, and that only a strong Israel will guard the free world from Islam, from the Islamic tsunami. We'll win. Nothing weakens like confusion. The lies underlining Oslo and the false peace initiatives it spawned severely weakened Israel. However, there has been an awakening here and a return to the Zionism that animated Israel's founding generation. Like then, we realize that it's not enough to know that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people, but our life depends on acting accordingly. Therefore, we will continue to live on and build our land, ignoring the immoral anti-Jewish decrees of the present Israeli government. The ad concludes, please join us, Mr. President. We invite you to stop hopping between two opinions and join us today at the Shdema Army Base, where in honor of your visit, we will be renewing the Jewish presence there. A footnote says that Shdema is a recently vacated Israeli army base in Area C, just south of Jerusalem, on the road connecting Har Choma to East Gush Etzion. The Olmert government wants to give Shdema to the PA, Palestinian Authority, for Arab occupation, despite the army's objection, on the grounds that it will endanger Jewish security. We will not allow this plan to proceed and intend to resecure the area by opening it to Jewish settlement today. Women in Green is the main signatory here, the first signatory, and many others that follow it. Now, there happens to be a full-page ad, which I'm not going to bother to read, on page 3. This is from the political left, and it turns your stomach a little when you read it. Obviously, I'm not giving you an objective summary of what's in today's paper. I did want to give you an inkling of the concern that we have for Israel, and especially with Bush's visit, and especially with this insane need that the government perceives to suck up to the United States over and over again. Bush is coming, we have to make concessions. Bush is sneezed, we have to make concessions. Condoleezza Rice is coming, we have to make concessions, 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 and it is suicidal. That's my analysis of the news. You know, I almost said, now let's get to more important things and continue talking about the Parsha or other issues which I'd like to bring up, but I'm not going to say that, because it's not more important. Torah is very important to the life of the Jewish people, but life is very valuable to the life of the Jewish people and security in Israel, etc., etc. These are things when anyone has ever taken me to task for politicizing Torah tidbits. If I write something that sounds politically right, my defense is, this is not politics, this is pikuach nefesh. It is a life-threatening situation. And therefore, I will take the time in a Torah shiur, or a Torah tidbits audio, or a Torah tidbits in print, and address these issues, because they are no less important than our being. Let me carry this one step further. Someone, in answer to what I just said, fired back at me, yeah, but there's opinions on the other side, so maybe that's pikuach nefesh. Well, it doesn't change my resolve to know that some people have a different opinion. I would say some people are deluded into having a different opinion, but let's not get into that. But even, and I'm not admitting this, if there was a legitimate other opinion, if I have come to the conclusion, based on people that I trust and analysis that I trust, that concessions to the Arabs or the creation of a Palestinian state, God forbid, are harmful to the survival of the Jewish people and the land of Israel, then I don't care how many other opinions there are. If that's the opinion that I believe, I will go for it with all of my heart and all of my might and all of my ability. Just like if there was a critically ill, close person to me who the doctors had different opinions. One doctor said an emergency, very new experimental surgery will be the only thing that'll save this person's life. And another person says that surgery is very problematic and very dangerous, and they don't recommend it. If I am convinced by the proponents of that procedure, then that's the determined course of action that I want to see followed. Similarly, I don't trust Olmert and his ilk in what they are trying to do. I am convinced by the ton of opposition to what they are trying to do that they are wrong, and the opposition at this moment is correct. Let's leave it at that without qualifying what's more important. Yesterday, I was very surprised that we had a decent number of Torah Tibbetz folders with all of the hysteria there was about the area being closed off, and it was inconvenient for some people to come, but they came. They came today and finished up the work before I got here. So yesterday I had opportunity to speak to the folders, and there were basically three different things. I hope to have you listen to all of them. Two of them related to the Sedra, and which is Bahar, and one related to Pirkei Avot for this week, Chapter 3. And please listen to them now. Two totally different things. The common feature of them is that when I write in Torah Tidbits, as much as I would like to, I'm restricted to space. And as the Torah Tibbetz proceeds from day to day in its production, the space requirement is really, really tight. Last night, middle of the night, on the last page that I work on, which nobody ever knows which one it is because the last page keeps changing, I had a very restricted amount of space, and I wanted to write something on Pirkei Avot. I looked in Pirkei Avot, and I had a new idea. And frustration was I didn't have enough room to explore it. So I went up and I reduced the point size of a certain passage, got myself another half a centimeter, pulled out a line here, got another half a centimeter, and I still didn't have enough room, which is why I want to share it with you. It's a famous Mishnah. It's the first Mishnah in the third Perek. It's the Mishnah that's quoted at funerals. Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim ve'einata boli de'avera. Ponder three things, says Akavya ben Mahalalel, and you will not fall into the clutches of sin. Da me'ayin bata, know from where you came,
Ula'an ata holech, and to where you are destined to go. Vilifnei mi ata atid litein din v'cheshbon, and before whom you will give judgment in the future. Then it continues. Me'ayin bata, where do you come from? Mi tipas rucha, from English translation, the fetid drop. It means the union of a single egg cell and a sperm, and that, according to the commentaries, is supposed to keep a person humble, because that's where you came from, and that's where every human being came from. Ula'an ata holech, and to where are you going? Lemakom afar rima v'toleya, to a place of dust, maggots, and worms, meaning the grave. That is also supposed to be a humble thing. Vilifnei mi ata atid litein din v'cheshbon, and before whom will you in the future give judgment? Lifnei melech malchei hamlochim ha-kodesh baruch hu, before God. The use of this Mishnah at a funeral is kind of obvious, because it talks of the ultimate end of all human beings. And one of the major questions about this Mishnah, which I believe gives us the right to interpret it in many different ways, not to reject another person's interpretation, but to supplement them, is the fact that the Mishnah breaks up the answer and then asks about it and then gives a fuller answer, a more fuller. In other words, look at the more straightforward presentation. Akavya ben Mahalalel says, ponder three things and you won't fall into the clutches of sin. Know from where you came, from a fetid drop, to where you are going, to the grave, and before whom you will stand judgment, God. Doesn't say that. It just says, know from where you come, and to where you go, and before whom you will stand judgment. Then it asks, all right, where do you come from? And an answer. Where are you going? And an answer. Before whom you will stand in judgment? God. And an answer. And I believe that it allows us to stop at that point in the middle of the Mishnah and ponder those three things, not the same way that Akavya ben Mahalalel ends up in the Mishnah, but in other ways as well. For example, this is a classic from the commentaries also, before I give you my own idea. Classic from the commentary is, all that we just mentioned was about the body. The body starts out as a union of a sperm and an egg, and ends up in the grave, and stands judgment before God. But the neshama has a different answer to those questions. The neshama did not come from tipas rucha. It does not go to afar, makom afar rima v'toleya. It came from God, and it goes back to God. But the pondering is a slightly different way of thinking. If the neshama came from God and goes back to God, then during its lifetime, it was connected with the goof that has a different origin and a different end. And that's why you have to give a din v'cheshbon on what you did between the time that your neshama and body were joined at conception and your body and neshama were separated at death. That's the din v'cheshbon that you have to give. Because if you were merely a body, an animal, for example, does not have to give a din v'cheshbon. The lion does not stand judgment as to why he attacked a straggling zebra behind a herd and rip out its throat and feed his family. Does not have to stand judgment for that. Because he comes from a tipas rucha and ends up as dust, and does not have a neshama component that he has to answer for, what did you do in the meantime? The human being has to say, has to stand judgment, what did you do during your lifetime that justifies your having received a soul and have it for X number of years? Did you treat that soul the way it's supposed to be? Did you seek spirituality and kedusha, or will you eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we may die, meaning totally physical? And it's that partnership that really explains why we have to give, why we're expected to give a din v'cheshbon in the future. That's classic until now. I thought of something else, and it sort of stems from the old joke about the kid who asks his father, "Dad, where do I come from?" And the father says, "All right, you're 10 years old. It's already time I tell you about the birds and the bees." And he sits down and gives him a whole lesson about where he comes from. And the kid said, "Dad, I know all of that. I just wanted to know where I come from. My friend Billy says he comes from St. Louis. Where do I come from?" So that question, where do you come from, can have different meanings. I had a wise guy friend who, when people say, "Where are you from?" he would answer like Pirkei Avot. He said, "From the union of a sperm and an egg." They meant, "Where? What city do you come from?" But he purposely switched it back the other way. You know, so that was his thing, and it was his line. Because he came from Broomall, Pennsylvania. I guess he was embarrassed to say so, because I never heard of it, you know. Yeah. So that was where he got his wise guy answer. But now let's look at the Mishnah in a different way. Where do you come from might mean your home background was, let's say, in a non-religious home. And where are you going, or to where did you go? You became a Baal Tshuva. Now, the process by which a person comes from a non-religious home and hopefully finds Yiddishkeit in some way, in some form, and then comes back to it, some people do it almost overnight, some people it's a long process, some people never finish the process, but that's the din v'cheshbon that a person has to give. Differently, when a person says, "I came from a religious home and a caring home and good schools, and look at me now, where I turned my back on it or I threw things away," that's a din v'cheshbon that a person has to give to also. In other words, wherever you came from and to wherever you go or where you went, that plus or minus or stagnating is something that a person eventually will have to give an accounting for.
Okay, there's a little bit more of this piece, and then two other pieces, which I hope to share with you. In the meantime, we're going for that halftime break, which you may or may not perceive, and we'll be back right shortly.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
As I said, let's listen to a little bit more of this first part on Pirkei Avot, and then we'll switch into Parshat Bahar.
And you could do this in many ways. It could be, I came from the United States, and I went to Israel to live. That's part of the Din V'cheshbon. Or I was born in Israel, and I went to the States after the army, and I never left there. Or I went supposedly for schooling, and I'm a student the rest of my life. Like that old joke about Rego Park, which is one of the neighborhoods in Queens where many, many, many Israelis live. They have or had a Macy's department store in Rego Park. And the joke goes that the young Israeli got a job as an elevator operator in Macy's. Didn't know much English, but they taught him going up, going down, first floor, second floor, yes, hardware department. Women's shoes, you know, they taught him all the things. And he's in his uniform. Obviously, it's an older joke because they don't have elevator operators anymore. And his bow tie and a cute cap. And the first, when he first starts, he gets in on the ground floor. The elevator is called up to the top floor. And when the doors open, there's a massive number of people in front of him. And he gets flustered. And he forgets all of the English he learned. And he said, "You're dim?" Meaning, are you going down? And they all answer in unison, "Lolo, rock studentim." You know, we're just students. not Yordim. Kamochein, I had an experience, this is just off the topic, I had an experience many years ago on a bus where I spotted someone who really didn't know me, but I knew him. He was an amazing tour guide. His name was Aharon Beer, Zichrono Livracha. He wrote the book, literally, wrote the book on touring Yerushalayim, and he was a phenomenal tour guide, and I admired him very much. I was standing by the back door, and he was approaching the back door to get off. And he said, Atayo Raid? And I went, Chas v'chalila. And he laughed. He thought that was such a wonderful response. Yeah. So, you know, it worked. Okay. Now, I described briefly going from one position to another position, but as I said or intimated, the same question of standing judgment goes for stagnating. You came from a religious home. You were sent to a yeshiva university. You had good education in Limudei Kodesh and in Limudei Chol. And now, what have you done with it? You know, what kind of, did you enrich the world and the Jewish community and your family life, or are you just coasting? That's something a person has to give a din v'cheshbon to also. And that's something that I certainly didn't have enough room to write in that half of a column in Torah Tidbits. So I'm sharing it with you and hope to share it with the radio listenership also. All right. Actually, let me make a statement about that. I wrote about it also. Baharan b'chukotai. Well, let's make it easier. Tazria Metzora and Achrimot Kedoshim are two pairs that are always together in 12-month years and always separate in 13-month years. Always. Bahar B'chukotai is almost that, except there is one regular year where in Chutz La'aretz it remains together and we separate it. It would be a situation where Pesach Seder is Friday night. First day Pesach, therefore, is Shabbat. Our last day of Pesach is Friday. And in Chutz La'aretz, it's the next Shabbat. Yeah. So we continue with Parshat HaShavua, which happens to be Shmini, when that happens. They have Acharon Shel Pesach. The next week they do Shmini, we're already up to Tazria Metzora. Then when they do Tazria Metzora, we're on Achrimot Kedoshim already. When they do Achrimot Kedoshim, we're on Emor. Mm-hmm. But when they do Emor, we read Bahar, not both. Mm-hmm. Then when they read Bahar B'chukotai, we read only B'chukotai, and we get back into sync. So the statistics, which I included also, turn out that in Chutz La'aretz, Bahar and B'chukotai is more often combined. In Israel, it's more often separated. Because that one-year type of a regular year where it is separated in Israel is the most common year, like it happens 18% of the time. Anyway, let's take this for as more than just a trivial statistical analysis. Because Bahar and B'chukotai, and this I indicated a little bit also in the writing, Bahar and B'chukotai are very well matched because of the following idea. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, says God to Moshe, tell the people, you have to keep Shemitah. And you have to keep Yovel. And there are many rules and regulations for these things, including some interpersonal aspects of this. In fact, Shemitah itself is partially Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, because it allows other people to come into your field where at other years they're not allowed to do that. So it's a generous, a compulsory generosity that that we give to other people. But the Seder goes more than that. It then goes into cheating people in business. And it's an interesting concept that comes from Yovel. I have a piece of land. I want to sell you that piece of land, and I conceal from you the fact that in 5 years' time, this plot of land, because of Yovel, will revert to its original owners and you lose it. Now, the Torah requires you to base your charge for a purchase like that on the number of years remaining to Yovel. And if you conceal that information, then you are potentially cheating the other person. Now, the halacha is that you can't cheat in business in any form, not just related to real estate for the number of years left to Yovel, but it's tied in by the text to Yovel, which means it's tied in to coming to Eretz Yisrael, which does not mean that you can be dishonest in business outside of Israel. But the fact that there's a link there in the Pasuk says the following to me. It says, your coming to Israel depends upon your behavior vis-a-vis the land, meaning the keeping of Shemitah and other mitzvot that are related to the land, and your relationship with the fellow members of your society, with other people. That was the title of the lead tidbit, treating the land and its people right. So there is an implication or an inference to draw from Bahar that our tenure in the land of Israel depends upon our following Torah and mitzvot in general, and the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, and the interpersonal mitzvot in particular. It does not say in Bahar, but if you don't, then you'll be punished. That's Bechukotai. In Bechukotai, which starts out again on the positive side, you have that heavy, heavy tochacha, that reproach, with God kivyochol wagging his finger and saying, if you dare violate Shemitah and not give the land its rest, then I promise you this and that will happen. And if you still persist in turning away from me, then that and the other thing will happen, and it goes on and on and on. So Bahar and Bechukotai are well matched, but I think it's a good thing that sometimes we read them in the same shot, but sometimes we read them separately, because when you read Bahar, just as we will this week, it's a 57, which is short, pasuk portion. Again, you'll read it in the statistics and Torah tidbits. There are only four sedras that are shorter. It's very small. It happens to be packed with mitzvot, only 24 of them, compared to the big sedras that have 74 and 63 and 55 and 53 and 51 and 41 and 28. Those are the ones that are ahead of the 24 in Bahar. But because it's so small, it rises in the rank of mitzvah dense sedra. But those mitzvot are your motivation to dwell in the land in peace and tranquility as promised by the Torah if you keep the mitzvot. And you don't have to get hit on the head with the tochacha until next week's reading. So there are some years, and I'm not making a comment on the frequency, if this is 63% and that's 37%, and in Israel it changes to 55 and 45, that's not relevant, at least I can't make it relevant at this moment. But the idea that sometimes they're read together and sometimes they're read separately, I find instructional. It's like telling a child, this is what I want you to do. And the first time you present it to him, you don't go heavy. You say, I expect you to be in bed by 10 o'clock and to shut off the television and to do your homework first. And if you do all of that, I have a special surprise for you in the morning. Then you tell him, maybe when you're on your way out the door, and remember, if you watch television before you do your homework, or you stay up later than 10 o'clock, then not only won't you get that surprise in the morning, but I'm going to take away your privileges of this and that and the other thing or whatever. Those are separated so that you can relate to the positive and hopefully not need to be clubbed over the head with the heaviness of the tochacha yet. This year we have a week to think about it. Now, another thing, if and you don't mind. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. I spoke about this the other day at a shir, but I want to put a focus on it. God spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai, saying, and following that are the laws of Shemitah, to which Rashi asks a very famous question, Ma Inyan Shemitah Esel Har Sinai? What does this have to do with the price of tea in China? Or any similar exception? Do you know how you say, what does this have to do with that in Hebrew? Ma Inyan Shemitah Esel Har Sinai? In common, modern, secular Hebrew, the expression that is used when you say in exasperation, what does one thing have to do with the other, is Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. I wonder how many non-religious Jews, if they found out that it was a Rashi on a Pasuk in the Torah, would change their expression. I don't know. I have a small list of other things like that. The one other example that comes to mind is teku. Teku is the modern Hebrew term for a tie score in a sporting game. What's the score in the soccer match? Each team has one goal. Teku. They say teku echad. Teku means an even tie. However you want to translate it into whatever language you want to translate it. Where does teku come from? It comes from the Gemara. Teku is generally considered to be an anacronym for Tishbi Yitaretz Kushot V'Abayot. Tishbi is Eliyahu Hanavi, as in Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi. Tishbi, nickname of Eliyahu Hanavi, will determine the difficult questions and disputes. In the Gemara, most disputes are settled. Beit Shammai says this, Beit Hillel says this, Halacha kevet Hillel. Rava says this, Abaye says this, Halacha kerava, except in six cases, and those are documented in the Gemara as well. Most disputes in the Talmud, and in the Mishnah, and in the Gemara, are settled. A relatively few disputes are unsettled where the conclusion in the Gemara is we have a quandary here, we have reason to choose one side or the other, and both make good sense to us. Teku means Eliyahu Hanavi, who will be the harbinger, if that's the correct pronunciation, of the Mashiach. He, one of his tasks will also be to answer all of these unanswered disputes. That's where teku comes from. And in modern Hebrew, it was borrowed for a tie score in a game.
All right, pardon the digression. Let's get back to the topic. I had an experience in summer 1969. I was a leader of a high school group. I was fresh out of college, a leader of a high school group to Israel that summer. I had been here once before, which I guess qualified me as a veteran. And on Shabbat Nachamu, the Shabbat after Tisha B'Av, I had assigned one of the boys in my group to give a Devar Torah at Seudah Shlishit. He came to me a couple of minutes before we started the meal, and he said he forgot, he's not prepared, he's not speaking. I always was the pinch hitter in those situations, and I quickly opened up the siddur that we had just davened mincha from, which included the Torah reading of the beginning of the following week's portion, which is Parshat Ekev. And as I'm looking it over, looking with an eye towards what to say to the group at Seudah Shlishit, a verse jumped off the page and smacked me in the middle of the forehead. Kol HaMitzvah, all of the commandments, Asher Anochi Mitzavacha Hayom that I am commanding you this day, says Moshe to the people, Tishmirun la'asot, you shall keep them to do them. For what purpose? Lema'an tichyun, so that you will live, urvitem, and multiply, uvatem, and come, virishtem et ha'aretz, and take over, settle the land, asher nishba Hashem la'avoteichem, that God has promised your ancestors. I read it again, and subsequently found a dozen other verses in Devarim that say pretty much the same thing. God says to the people of Israel, you are being taken out of Egypt. I am going to make a commitment, a mutual commitment with you. You will follow my Torah, and I will bring you to the land of Israel where you will live a life of Torah. That's the deal. Torah and Israel are totally inseparable. Comes the question, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, and if Shemitah, sabbatical year, represents the land of Israel and the mitzvot related to the land, and Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, represents Torah, then in essence the question is, what does Eretz Yisrael, what does the land of Israel have to do with Torah? And that's a non-starting question, because the answer is it has everything to do with it. Now, the fact of the matter is, Jewish history evolved in such a way, developed in such a way, that there was a separation between Torah and Eretz Yisrael. We were exiled from Israel, and we took Torah with us. We returned, we were exiled again from Israel, and we took Torah with us. In our time, Jews are coming back to Israel with their Torah and rebuilding the land and resettling the land and repopulating the land so that it once again will be the proper venue for a life of Torah. That's how I feel when I hear that question, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai? The answer is, it is the most obvious things that are connected, Torah and Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, I have this memory, which I've shared with radio listenership in the past, of overhearing two Jews from Muncie, New York, could be a lot of other places as well, who said, I have everything I need to live a complete Jewish life here in Muncie. So I butted in and I said, you mean you have shuls, synagogues? Yes. Mikvah? Sure. Yeshivot? Of course. Shabbat? Oh, Shabbat is so wonderful there. Kashrut? We have Shomer Shabbos this, kosher this, that, and the other thing. Israel? What do you mean? I said, what do you mean, what do you mean? They said, I don't know why you mean. What do you say Israel for? I said, you have everything you need for a complete Jewish life in Muncie. What about Israel? That's part of Jewish life. That's more than part of Jewish life. They had no answer, and a lot of my fellows who and relatives who still live in the States also don't have an answer. But it doesn't mean it's not an important question. You have to have an answer for that. The answer is, I have a situation where temporarily I am in Chutz La'aretz, but of course I know that the Jew is supposed to be in Israel. Unfortunately, there are people who don't know that or don't want to know that, and that's a theme that has popped its head up in many, many Torah tidbits over the years. Of course, this is not what Rashi had in mind when he asked that question, and he has good answers for it, but I take it in a different way and try to use the opportunity to make that point. Now, the fact of the matter is, not only have we been separated from Israel throughout history, but we have developed an attitude because of it, a very self-preserving attitude of Israel is not that essential to our existence, because otherwise we would have died. We would have shriveled up into nothingness. If we would go around saying, woe unto us, we can't have or we don't have Israel, we would be lost. So we did it too well and developed an attitude of who needs Israel. The answer is, it is the place for the Jewish people. So therefore, we need Israel. What many Jews unfortunately have to relearn is the total connection between the land of Israel, the Torah of Israel, and the people of Israel in very real terms. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Lehishtameah.